Master Justin told them when they returned to the smithy after a hastily consumed afternoon meal. There's only one thing to remember about the forge. He held his arms up, displaying the numerous scars that marked the thickly muscled flesh. It's hot. He had them empty several sacks of coke into the brick circle that formed the forge, then told Canis to fire it, a task that involved crawling underneath and setting light to the oak wood tinder in the gap beneath. Valin would have balked at it, but Canis scrambled to it without any hesitation, flaming taper in hand. He emerged a few moments later, blackened but undamaged. "Seems well alight, Master," he reported. Master Justin ignored him and crouched to inspect the growing blaze.
"You,"
he nodded at Valin. He never called them by name. Seemingly recalling names was a pointless distraction.
"On the bellows. You too."
He flicked a finger at Nortar. Marcus, Dentos, and Canis were told to stand and wait for instructions. Hefting his heavy, blunt-headed hammer, Master Justin lifted one of the iron rods from the sack next to the anvil.
"A sword blade of the Azraelan pattern is fashioned from three rods. A thick central rod, and two thinner rods for the edge. This," he held up the rod in his hand, "is one of the edge rods. It must be shaped before it is melded with the others. The edge is the hardest part of the sword to forge. It must be fine but strong. It must cut, but also withstand a blow from another blade. Look at the metal. Look closely."
He held the rod out to each of them in turn, his rough, uneven voice oddly hypnotic.
"See the flecks of black there?"
Valin peered at the rod, picking out the small black fragments amidst the dark grey of the iron.
"It's called star silver, because it glows brighter than the heavens when it's put to the flame," Justin went on. "But it's not silver. It's a form of iron, rare iron that comes from the earth like all metals. There's nothing dark about it, but it's this that makes the swords of the Order stronger than others. With this, your blades will withstand blows that would shatter others, and if wielded with skill, will cut through mail and armor. This is our secret. Guard it well."
He motioned for Valin and Norta to begin pumping the bellows, and watched as their efforts were rewarded by the gradual appearance of a deep red glow in the mass of coke.
"Now," he said, hefting his hammer, "watch closely. Try and learn."
Valin and Norta started to sweat profusely as they heaved at the heavy wooden handle of the bellows, the heat in the smithy rising with every flush of air they forced into the forge. The atmosphere seemed to thicken with it, drawing a breath becoming an effort in itself.
"Get on with it, for faith's sake," Valin groaned inwardly, his sweat-slicked arms aching as Master Justin waited and waited.
Finally satisfied, the smith took hold of the rod with a pair of iron tongs and plunged it into the forge, waiting until the red-orange glow flowed into the metal and along its length before taking it out and placing it on the anvil. The first blow was light, little more than a tap, scattering a small cloud of sparks. Then he began to work in earnest, the hammer rising and falling with drumbeat precision, sparks fountaining around him, the hammer sometimes blurring with the speed of his swing. Oddly, there seemed to be scant change in the glowing rod at first, although it may have gotten a little longer by the time Master Justin plunged it into the forge again, gesturing irritably for Valin and Norta to pump harder. It wore on for what seemed like an hour, but could only have been about 10 minutes, Master Justin hammering at the rod, returning it to the forge, hammering again. Valin found himself longing for the bruising comforts of the practice field. Hand-to-hand combat on icy ground was better than this. When Master Justin signaled them to stop, they both staggered away from the bellows and leaned their heads out of the door, heaving great gulps of sweet-tasting air into their lungs.
"The bastard's trying to kill us," Norta gasped.
"Get back here,"
Master Justin growled as they hurried inside. "You need to get used to real work. Look here."
He held up the rod, its original rounded shape had changed to a three-sided strip of metal about a yard long.
"This is an edge. It seems rough now, but melded with his brothers, it will be keen and bright with purpose."
Dentos and Canis were told to take over the bellows, and Master Justin started on the other edge, the toll of the hammer a ringing counterpoint to the rasp of their breath as they worked. When the second edge was complete, he began on the thick central rod, his blows becoming harder and more rapid, extending the rod's length to match the edges, then tempering the blade to form a raised spine along the middle. By the time he was finished, Canis and Dentos were ready to drop, and Barkus partnered Valen at the bellows. The smith took a bracket to bind the three rods together at the base, and made ready to meld them. "The melding is the test of a swordsmith," he informed them. "It is the hardest skill to learn. Too hard a blow will spoil the blade, too light and the rods won't meld." He glanced over at Valen and Barkus. "Heave hard. Keep the fire hot, no slacking." As they worked, Valen praying for an end, he noticed Barkus's gaze was fixed on Master Jestin, his arms rising and falling without pause, seeming oblivious to the pain, his whole attention riveted on the process unfolding on the anvil. At first, Valen wondered what was so interesting. It was a man hitting a piece of metal with a hammer. He saw no spectacle in it, no mystery. But as he followed Barkus's gaze, he found himself increasingly absorbed by the sight of the blade taking shape, the three rods fusing together under the force of the hammer. Occasionally the flecks of star silver in the edge rods would flare as Master Jestin took the blade from the forge, glowing so brightly he had to look away. He believed what the smith had said about the star silver being just another metal, but still it was unnerving. "You," Master Jestin nodded at Norta as he finished shaping the point. "Fetch the bucket closer." Norta obediently dragged the heavy wooden bucket closer to the anvil. It was nearly full to the brim, and water sloshed over his feet as he heaved it into place. "This is salt water," Jestin told them. "A blade quenched in brine will always be stronger than one quenched in fresh water. Stand back, it'll boil." He took a firm grip on the tang at the base of the blade and plunged it into the bucket, making it steam and roil as the heat seeped into the water. He held it there until the boil subsided, then withdrew the steaming blade, holding it up for inspection. It was black, the metal stained with soot, but Master Jestin seemed content with it. The edges were straight, and the point perfectly symmetrical. "Now," he said, "the real work begins. You," he turned to Canis, "since you lit the forge, you can have this one." Canis said, clearly wondering if this was an honor or a curse. "Thank you, Master." Jestin carried the blade to the far end of the smithy, laying it on a bench next to a large pedal-driven grindstone. "A new forged blade is only half-born," he informed them. "It must be sharpened, polished, honed." He had Canis stand at the grindstone and set it turning with the pedal, demonstrating how to get a good rhythm going by counting 1, 2, 1, 2, before telling him to increase the speed and hold the blade to the stone. The instant fountain of sparks made Canis step back in alarm, but Jestin ordered him to keep at it, guiding his hands to get the correct angle, then showing him how to move the blade across the stone so that its whole length was honed. "That's it," he grunted after a while when Canis grew confident enough to move the blade on his own. 10 minutes for each edge, then show me what you've done. The rest of you back to the forge. You and you, on the bellows." And so they worked and sweated in the forge, 7 long days of heaving bellows, grinding edges, and working polish into the blades so that the soot disappeared and they gleamed like silver. None of them escaped unscathed. Valen bore a livid scar on the back of his hand where a speck of molten metal landed. The pain and the smell of his own skin burning was uniquely sickening. The others suffered similar injury, Dentos coming off worst with a scattering of sparks into his eyes during a careless moment on the grinder. The sparks left a cluster of blackened scars around his left eye, but luckily there was no damage to his vision. Despite the exhaustion, the risk of disfiguring injury and the tedium of the work, Valen couldn't resist a certain fascination with the process. There was a beauty to it. The gradual birth of the blades under Master Jestin's hammer, the feel of the edge against the grindstone, the pattern that emerged in the blade as he polished it, dark swirls in the blue-gray of the steel, as if the flames of the forge had been frozen in the metal somehow. "It comes from the merging of the rods," Barkus explained. "Different kinds of metal coming together leaves a mark. I guess the star silver makes it more noticeable in order blades." "I like it," Valen said, lifting the half-polished blade up to the light. "It's..."
Interesting. It's just metal, Barker sighed, turning back to the stone where he was putting an edge on his own sword. Heat it, beat it, shape it. There's no mystery there. Velin watched his friend work at the wheel, the way his hands moved expertly, honing the edge with perfect precision. When Barker's turn came, Master Jestin hadn't even bothered to show him, just handed him the blade and walked away. Somehow Barker's skill was obvious to the smith. They said little, barely exchanging more than a few grunts or mumbled agreements, as if they had been working together for many years. But Barker showed no joy in his work, no satisfaction. He stuck to it readily enough. The skills he displayed putting them all to shame, but his face was an uncharacteristic mask of grim endurance whenever they were in the smithy, only brightening when they escaped to the practice field or dining hall. The next day saw the fitting of the hilts. These were ready-made, almost identical, Master Jestin fitting them to the blades and securing them with three iron nails hammered through the tang, which extended into the hilt. They were then set to work filing down the nail heads so they were flush with the oak handles.
"You are done here," Jestin told them at the end of the day. "The swords are yours. Use them well."
It was the closest he'd come to sounding like the other masters. He turned back to the forge without another word. They stood around uncertainly, holding their swords and wondering if they were supposed to say something in return.
Kenneth said. "Thank you for your wisdom, master."
Jestin lifted an unfinished spearhead onto his anvil and began to work the bellows.
"Our time here was very..." Kenneth began, but Valen nudged him and gestured at the door. As they were leaving, Jestin spoke again.
"Barker's Jeshua!"
They stopped, Barker's turning, his expression guarded.
"Master?"
"The door's always open to you," Jestin said without turning.
"I could use the help."
"I'm sorry, master," Barker said tonelessly. "I'm afraid my training leaves me little time as it is."
Jestin released the bellows and lifted his spearhead into the forge.
"I'll be here, so will the forge, when you get tired of the blood and the shit. We'll be here."
Barker missed the evening meal, something none of them could remember happening before. Velin found him on the wall after paying his nightly visit to Scratch's kennel.
"Brought you some leftovers."
Velin handed him a sack containing a pie and a few apples. Barker nodded his thanks, his attention fixed on the river, where a barge was making its way upstream to Varinsold.
"You want to know?"
he said after a while. His voice held none of his usual humor or irony, but Valen was chilled to detect a faint trace of fear.
"If you want to tell me," he said, "we all have our secrets, brother. Like why you keep that scarf."
He gestured at Sella's scarf round Valen's neck. Valen tucked it out of sight and patted him on the shoulder before turning to go.
"It first happened when I was 10, Barker said.
Valen paused, waiting for him to continue. In his own way, Barker could be as closed as the rest of them. He would talk or he wouldn't. Prompting or persuasion would be useless.
"My father had me working in the smithy since I was little," Barker continued after a moment. "I loved it. Loved watching him shape the metal. Loved the way it glowed in the forge. Some say the ways of the smith are mysterious. For me, it was all so obvious, so easy. I understood it all. My father hardly had to teach me anything. I just knew what to do. I could see the shape the metal would take before the hammer fell. Could tell if a plow blade would cut through soil or get stuck, or if a shoe would fall from a hoof after only a few days. My father was proud. I knew it. He wasn't much for talk, not like me. I get that from my mother. But I knew he was proud. I wanted to make him even more proud. I had shapes in my head. Shapes of knives, swords, axes, all waiting to be forged. I knew exactly how to make them, exactly the right mix of metals to use. So I snuck into the smithy one night to make one. A hunting knife, a small thing, I thought. A Winterfall present for my father." He paused, staring out into the night as the barge moved further downstream, the shapes of the bargemen on the deck vague and ghost-like in the dim light from the bow lantern.
"So you made the knife," Velin prompted. "But your father was...
angry?"
"Oh, he wasn't angry," Barker sounded bitter. He was scared. The blade folded over and over to strengthen it, the edge keen enough to cut silk or pierce armor. So polished you could use it as a mirror. The small smile forming on his lips faded. He threw it in the river, and told me never to speak of it to anyone, ever. Velen was puzzled. He should have been proud. A knife like that made by his son. Why would it scare him? My father had seen a lot in his life. He travelled with the Lord's host, served on a merchant ship in the eastern seas, but he'd never seen a knife forged in the smithy where the forge was cold. Valen's puzzlement deepened. Then how did you... Something in Barkus's face made him stop. Nilselins are a great people in many ways, Barkus went on. Hardy, kind, hospitable. But they fear the dark above all things. In my village there was once an old woman who could heal with a touch. Or so they said. She was respected for the work she did, but always feared. When the Red Hand came, she could do nothing to stop it. Dozens died. Every family in the village lost someone, but she never caught it. They locked her in her house and set it on fire. The ruin's still there. No one ever had the courage to build on it. How did you make that knife, Barkus? I'm still not sure. I remember shaping the metal at the anvil, the hammer in my hand. I remember fitting the handle, but for the life of me I can't remember lighting the forge. It was as if when I started to work I lost myself. As if I was just a tool, like the hammer. Like something was working through me. He shook his head, clearly disturbed by the memory. My father wouldn't let me in the smithy after that. Took me to old man Callus, the horse breeder. Told him he'd tried his best to teach me, but I just wasn't going to make a smith. Paid him 5 coppers a month to teach me the horse trade. He was trying to protect you, Valen said. I know. But that's not how it felt to a boy. It felt like he was frightened by what I'd done, worried that I'd shame him somehow. I even thought he might be jealous. So I decided to show him what I could really do. I waited until he was away hawking wares at the Summertide Fair and went back to the smithy. There wasn't much to work with, some old horseshoes and nails. He'd taken most of his stock to sell at the fair. But I took what he left, and I made something. Something special. What was it? Velen asked, envisioning mighty swords and gleaming axes. A sun vane. Velen frowned. A what? Like a wind vane, except instead of pointing at the direction of the wind, it pointed at the sun. Wherever it was in the sky, you always knew what time of day it was, even when the sky was clouded over. When the sun went down, it'd point at the ground, and track it through the earth. I made it pretty, too, had flames coming out of the shaft and everything. Valen could only guess at the value of such an item, and the stir it would cause in a village terrified of the dark. What happened to it? I don't know. I suppose my father melted it down. When he came back from the fair, I was standing there, showing him what I'd made. I felt very smug. He told me to pack. My mother was away at my aunt's, so he didn't have to explain it to her. Faith knows what he told her when she came back and found me gone. We spent 3 days on the road, then took a ship to Varenthold, then came here. He spoke to the Aspect for a while and then left me at the gate. Said if I ever told anyone what I could do, they would certainly kill me. Said I'd be safe here. He laughed shortly. Hard to believe he thought he was doing me a favour. Sometimes I think he got lost on the way to the House of the Fifth Order. Valen shook away the memory of hoofbeats and, remembering Sella's tale, said, "He was right, Barkus. You shouldn't tell anyone. You probably shouldn't have told me." "Why? You're going to kill me, are you?" Valen smiled grimly. "Well, not today." They stood at the wall in companionable silence, watching the barge until it turned a bend in the river and disappeared. "I think he knew, you know," Barkus said. "Master Jestin, I think he could sense it, what I can do. How could he know such a thing? Because I could sense the same thing in him." Chapter 6 The next day saw the first practice with their new swords. It seemed to Valen that half the lesson was taken up with the correct method of strapping it across the back, so it could be drawn by reaching over the shoulder.
Tighter, Nyssa!
Solis tugged hard at Canis's belt strap, drawing a pained grunt.
This thing gets loose in a battle, you'll know about it soon enough. Can't kill an enemy if you're tripping over your own sword belt.
They then spent over an hour learning the correct method of drawing the sword in a smooth, swift motion. It was harder than Master Solis made it look. The leather strap holding the sword firmly in the scabbard had to be thumbed aside, and the blade pulled clear without snagging or cutting its owner. Their first attempts were so clumsy, Solis ran them twice around the field at full speed, the unfamiliar weight of the swords making them sluggish.
"Faster, Sorna!" Solis lashed at him as he stumbled. "You too, Sandal! Pick up your feet!"
He ordered them to try again.
"Do it right. The faster you can get your sword in your hand and ready to use, the less likely some bastard is going to spill your guts out in front of you."
There were more runs and several canings before he was satisfied they were making progress. For some reason, Valen and Norta were attracting most of his ire today, the cane falling on them more than the others. Valen surmised it was punishment for some forgotten infraction. Solis was like that sometimes, often remembering past misdemeanors after an interval of weeks or months. As the lesson ended, he lined them up to make an announcement.
"Tomorrow you little buggers are to be let loose on the Summertide Fair. Some boys from the city may try to fight you to prove themselves. Try not to kill any. Some of the local girls may also see you as a different kind of challenge. Avoid them. Sandal, Sorna, you're staying here. I'll teach you to slack off."
Valen, crushed by disappointment and injustice, could only gape in shock. Norta, however, was fully capable of voicing his feelings.
"You must be bloody joking," he shouted. "The others were just as bad as us. How come we have to stay?"
Later, as he sat on his bed nursing a bruised and aching jaw, his anger was no less fierce.
"That bastard's always hated me more than the rest of you."
"He hates everyone," Barker said.
"You and Valen were just unlucky today."
"No. It's because my father's the king's first minister, I'm sure of it."
"If your old man's such a biggy-wig, how come he can't get you out of the order?" Dentos asked.
"I mean, you hate being here." "How should I know?" Norta exploded. "I didn't ask him to send me to this pit. I didn't ask to be frozen, nearly killed 10 times over, beaten every day, live in this hovel with peasants."
He trailed off miserably, huddling on his bunk, head buried in his pillow. "I thought they would let me leave at the test of knowledge," he said, more to himself than them, his voice muffled. "When they saw my heart. But that damn woman said I was where the faith needed me to be. I even started lying about everything, but they wouldn't let me go. That pig Hendril said the Sixth Order would benefit from having one of my breeding in its ranks." He fell silent, still hiding his face. Barkus moved to pat him on the shoulder, but Valen stopped him with a shake of the head. He pulled the small oak chest from under his bed, his most valued possession next to Sella's scarf, stolen from the back of a merchant's cart carelessly left near the front gate. He unlocked it and retrieved the leather pouch containing all the coins he had found, won, or stolen over the years. He tossed it to Canis. "Bring me back some toffees, and a new pair of soft leather boots if you find any that'll fit me." The morning dawned thick with mist, a heavy, soft blue haze hanging over the surrounding fields, waiting for the summer sun to burn it away. Valen and Norta sat in miserable silence through the morning meal as the others tried not to appear too eager to leave for the fair.
"Think they'll find any bears?" Dentos asked, casually.
"I suppose," Canis said.
"Always bears at the Summertide Fair. Drunkards wrestle them for money. Plenty of other things, too.
When I went, there was a magician from the Alperian Empire, who could play a flute and make a snake dance."
Valen had been taken to the fair every year before his father gave him to the order, and he retained vivid memories of dancers, jugglers, hawkers, acrobats, and 1,000 other marvels amidst the mass of sound and smell. He hadn't realized before just how badly he wanted to see it again, to touch something from his childhood and see if it matched the whirlwind of color and joy he remembered.
"The king will be there," he said to Canis, recalling a distant view of the royal pavilion, where Janus and his family looked down on the many contests being played out on the tourney field.
There were horse races, wrestling, fist fights, archery, the victors receiving a red ribbon from the hand of the king. It had seemed a poor reward for so much effort, but the winners all seemed happy enough. "Maybe you'll get close enough to let him use you as a foot scraper," Norta said. "You'd like that, wouldn't you?" Canis seemed unperturbed. "It's not my fault you're not allowed to go, brother," he responded mildly. Norta looked as if he was about to voice another insult, but instead just pushed his plate away and got up from the table, stalking from the hall, his face set in a mask of anger. "He's really not taking this well," Barkus observed. After the meal, Valen bade them farewell in the courtyard, gratified by the effort they put into their facade of reluctance. "I'll—" Canis began with an effort. "Stay if you want me to." Valen was touched by the offer. He knew how badly Canis wanted to see the king. "If you don't go, how am I going to get my boots?" He clasped hands with each of them, and waved as they walked to the main gate. He went to see Scratch, and found to his surprise that the slave hound had made a new friend, an Azraelian wolfhound bitch, almost as tall at the shoulder as he was, although nowhere near as muscular. "She got into the pen a few nights ago," Master Jekyllin told him. "Faith knows how. Surprised he didn't kill her outright. Think he wanted the company. Reckon I'll even be. Maybe have us a litter in a few months." Scratch was his usual happy, bouncing self at seeing Valen, the bitch cautious but reassured by Scratch's welcome. Valen tossed scraps to them, noting how the bitch wouldn't eat until Scratch had. "She's afraid of him," he commented. "With good reason," Master Jekyllin said cheerfully. "Can't keep away, though. Bitches are like that sometimes. Choose a mate and won't let go whatever he does. Typical women, eh?" He laughed. Valen, having no idea what he meant, laughed along politely. "Not at the fair, then," Jekyllin continued, moving away to toss some food to the three Nilsalin terriers he kept at the far end of the kennels. They were deceptively pretty animals with short, pointed snouts and big brown eyes, but would nip viciously at any hand that came too close. Master Jekyllin kept them for hunting hares and rabbits, an activity at which they excelled. "Master Solis felt I was slacking at sword practice," Valen explained. Jekyllin tuttered in disapproval. "Never make a brother if you don't try hard. Of course, in my day, they'd flog you with a horsewhip for slacking off. 10 strokes for first offence, 10 more for each offence after that. Used to lose 10 or 12 brothers a year through flogging." His sigh was heavy with nostalgia. "Pity you'll miss the fair, though. They have some fine dogs for sale there. Be off myself when I've finished up here. It'll be terrible crowded, though, what with the execution and all. Here you go, you little monsters." He threw some meat into the terrier's cage, provoking an explosion of yelps and growls as they fought each other for the food. Master Jekyllin chuckled at the sight. "Execution, Master?" Valen asked. "What?" "Oh, the king's having his first minister hung. Treason and corruption, usual thing. That's why there'll be such a crowd. Everyone in the realm hates the bastard. Taxes, you see." Valen felt his mouth go dry, and his heart sink into his gut. Norta's father? They're going to kill Norta's father. That's why Solis kept us here. Made me stay too so it didn't look suspicious. So I would be here when the news arrived. He found himself taking a closer look at Master Jekyllin. "Did Master Solis visit here this morning?" he asked. Jekyllin didn't look at him, still smiling down at his dogs. "Master Solis is very wise. You should appreciate him more." "I have to tell him?" Valen grated. Jekyllin said nothing, dangling some ham through the bars of the cage, grunting a laugh every time the terriers jumped for it. Valen stumbled over the words, clearing his throat, backing towards the door. "If you'll excuse me, Master." Jekyllin waved a hand, not turning, laughing affectionately at the squabbling terriers. "Little monsters!" Crossing the courtyard, Valen felt that the weight of responsibility might force him to the cobbles. Suddenly he hated Solis and the aspect. "Leadership," he thought bitterly. "You can keep it." But there was another thought. A growing suspicion as he reluctantly ascended the winding steps to the tower room. A lingering image of Norta's face as he stalked from the dining hall.
Valen had seen only anger at that time, but now realized there'd been something more. A sense of determination. A decision. He stopped as realization hit him. Oh, please. Faith, no. He took the remaining steps at a run, bursting into the room, panic making him shout, Norta! Empty. Maybe he's at the stables. He likes the horses. Then he saw it. The open window, the absence of sheets and blankets on their beds. Leaning out of the window, he saw the knotted linen dangling a good 20 feet below, which left another 15-foot drop to the roof of the north gatehouse, and 10 more from there to the ground. For Norta, like the rest of them, it was hardly a challenging prospect. The lingering morning mist would enable him to slip away under the noses of the brothers on the wall, most of whom would have been preoccupied with the anticipation of breakfast. For the briefest moment, Velen considered finding Master Solis or the Aspect, but discounted it. Norta's punishment would be severe, and he already had at least a half-hour start. Besides, Valen didn't even know if Solis or the Aspect were in the house. They may well have been at the fair, too. And there was another possibility, ringing loud and terribly clear in his head. What if he makes it there first? What if he sees? Valen quickly gathered a water bottle and a couple of knives, then strapped his sword across his back. He went to the window, took a firm grip on Norta's rope, and began to descend. As expected, it was an easy climb, taking barely a moment to reach the ground. With the mist all gone, he had to be wary of being seen, standing flat against the wall until the brother on the battlements above, a bored-looking boy of about 17, wandered away, then sprinting full tilt for the trees. The run would have seemed short on the practice field, scarcely 200 yards to the forest, but it felt like a mile or more, with the wall at his back, expecting every second to hear a shout of alarm or even the thrum of an arrow. At this range, few brothers would miss. So it was with relief that he entered the cool shadow of the trees and dropped his speed to a half-sprint, still faster than he would have liked for comfort, but he couldn't afford to waste any time. He stayed in the trees for half a mile or so, then turned onto the road. It was busier than he'd ever seen it, packed with farmers driving carts laden with produce for sale at the fair, families making the once-a-year journey to see the contests, and the many spectacles on offer. This year, no doubt, the promise of a First Minister's execution added a certain spice to the occasion. None of the travellers seemed daunted by the prospect. Valen saw cheerful, laughing faces everywhere. He even passed a cart full of what he took to be woodsmen from their collection of axes, all singing a raucous doggerel about the impending event.
His name was Artis Sendel. He was a greedy old goat. King Janus came to count his purse and stretched his greedy throat.
"Don't run so fast, order boy," one of the woodsmen called to him as he passed, swaying as he raised a stoneware bottle. "They can't choke the bastard till we get there. Some bugger has to cut the wood for the fire."
The rest of the woodsmen roared with laughter as Valen ran on, resisting the urge to see how well a drunkard could cut wood with his fingers broken. He heard it before he saw it. A dull roar beyond the next hill. The sound of thousands of voices speaking at once. As a child, he had thought it a monster, and snuggled into his mother's embrace in fear. "Hush now," she said, stroking his hair, turning his head gently as they crested the rise. "Look, Valen. Look at all the people." To his boy's eyes, it had seemed every subject in the realm had come to the expansive plain before the walls of Varenshold to share in the blessings of summer, a vast throng covering several acres. Now he found he was amazed to see the crowd was even larger than he remembered, stretching the whole length of the city's western wall, a haze of mingled exhalation and wood smoke hanging over the mass, tents and brightly coloured marquees rising from the carpet of bodies. For a youth who had spent much of the last 4 years in the cramped fortress of the Order House, it was almost overwhelming. "How can I track him in this?" he wondered. Behind him came the song of the drunken woodsmen again, as their cart caught up, still rejoicing in the death of the king's minister. "Don't look for him," he realized. "Look for the gallows. He'll be there." Entering the crowd was an odd experience, mingling exhilaration with trepidation, the throng enveloping him in a mass of moving bodies and unfamiliar odours. Hawkers were everywhere, their shouts barely audible above the noise, selling everything from sweetmeats to earthenware. Here and there, a knot of spectators had gathered around players and performers, jugglers, acrobats, and magicians, drawing either cheers and applause or jeers of derision. Velen tried not to be distracted, but found himself stopping at the more spectacular sights. There was a hugely muscled man who could breathe fire, and a dark-skinned man in silk robes who pulled trinkets from the ears of people in the crowd. Velen would linger for a few seconds before remembering his mission and shamefacedly moving on. It was as he stopped, amazed at the sight of a half-naked female tumbler, that he felt her hand inside his cloak. It was deft, almost unnoticeable, searching. He caught the intruder's wrist with his left hand and dragged the owner forward, tripping him over his left ankle. The pickpocket went down heavily, grunting painfully with the impact. It was a boy, small, skinny, dressed in rags. He looked up at Velen and snarled, lashing out with his free hand and desperately trying to pull away.
"Ha! Thief!"
A man in the crowd laughed nastily.
"She'd know better than to try it on with the order."
At the mention of the order, the boy's efforts to free himself redoubled, scratching and biting at Valen's hand.
"Kill him, brother,"
another passerby suggested.
"One less thief in the city is a good thing."
Velen ignored the voice and lifted the pickpocket off his feet. It wasn't difficult. The boy was little more than skin and bone.
"You need practice," he told him. "Fuck you," the boy spat, squirming frantically. "You're not a real brother. You're one of them boy brothers. You know better than me." "Needs a beating, this one," a man said, emerging from the crowd to aim a cuff at the boy's head.
"Go away," Velen instructed.
The man, a plump fellow with a large ale-soaked beard and eyes showing the unfocused gaze of the newly drunk, gave Velen a brief appraisal and quickly moved away. At 14, Velen was already taller than most men, the Ordis regime making him both broad and lean. He stared in turn at the several other spectators who had paused to watch the small drama. They all moved on rapidly. "It's not just me," Velen surmised. "They fear the order."
"Let me go, you bastard,"
the boy said, fear and fury colouring his voice in equal measure. He had exhausted himself struggling and dangled in Valen's grasp, face set in a soot-stained mask of impotent rage.
"I got friends, you know, people you don't want to cross."
"I have friends too," Velen said. "I'm looking for one. Where are the gallows?" The boy's face constricted in a puzzled frown.
"What's that?"
"The gallows, where they're going to hang the king's minister. Where are they?" The boy's creased brows formed into an arch of calculation.
"What's it worth?"
Velen tightened his grip.
"A broken wrist?" "Miserable order bastard," the boy muttered sullenly. "Break me wrist if you want. Break me bloody arm. What odds does it make anyway?"
Velen met his eyes, seeing fear and anger, but something more. Something that made him relax his grip. Defiance. The boy had pride enough not to be a victim to his fear. Velen saw how truly ragged and threadbare the boy's clothes were, and the mud covering his bare feet. Maybe pride is all he has.
"I'm going to put you down," he told the boy. "If you run, I'll catch you."
He pulled the boy closer until they were face to face.
"Do you believe me?"
The boy shrank back a little, head bobbing.
"Uh-huh."
Velen set him down and released his wrist. He saw the boy fight the instinctive impulse to run, rubbing his wrist and edging back a little.
"What's your name?" Velen asked him.
"Frentis,"
the boy replied cautiously.
"What's yours?"
"Velen Alsorna." There was a flicker of recognition in the boy's gaze. Even he, at the bottom of a pile in the city's hierarchy, had heard of the Battle Lord.
"Here."
Velen fished a throwing knife from his pocket and tossed it to the boy. "It's all I have to trade. You'll get another two when you show me the gallows." The boy peered at the knife curiously.
"What's this?"
"A knife. You throw it."
"Could you kill someone with it?"
"Only after a lot of practice." The boy touched the tip of the knife, tutting painfully and licking his bloodied finger when he discovered it was sharper than it looked.
"You teach me," he mumbled around his fingers. "Teach me how to throw it and I'll show you the gallows."
"After," Velen said. Seeing the boy's distrust, he added, "My word on it." The word of the order seemed to carry some weight with Frentis, and his suspicion receded, but not completely.
"This way," he said, turning and moving into the crowd. "Stay close."
Valen followed the boy through the mass of people, sometimes losing him amidst the crush, only to find him a few steps on, standing impatiently and muttering for him to keep up.
"Don't they teach you how to follow folk, then?"
he asked as they struggled through a particularly thick knot of spectators at a dancing bear show.
"They teach us how to fight," Valen replied. "I'm unused to so many people. I haven't been to the city for 4 years." "Lucky bastard. I'd give me right nut to never see this dump again."
"You've never been anywhere else?"
Frentis gave him a look that told him he was very stupid. "Oh, yeah. Got me own river barge, I have. Go anywhere I please."
It seemed to take an age of struggling through the crowd before Frentis halted, pointing at a wooden frame rising above the throng about 100 yards away.
"There you go. That's where they'll stretch the poor sod's neck. What are they killing him for, anyway?"
"I don't know," Valen replied honestly. He handed the boy the 2 knives he had promised. "Come to the order house on Eltrin evening, and I'll teach you how to use them. Wait by the north gate, I'll find you." Frentis nodded, the knives quickly disappearing into his rags.
"You gonna watch it, then? The hanging?"
Valen moved away from him, eyes scanning the crowd.
"I hope not."
He searched for a good quarter hour, checking every face, watching for any sign of Norta, finding nothing. He shouldn't have been surprised. They all knew ways of avoiding searching eyes, subtle ways of making oneself unrecognizable and just another body in the crowd. He paused by a puppet show, feeling a mounting knot of panic building in his gut. Where is he?
"O blessed souls of the departed,"
the puppeteer was saying in a mock tragic tone, his expert hands working the strings, molding the wooden doll on the stage into a pose of despair.
"Ever have I been faithless, but even a wretch such as I deserves not this fate."
Curlis the Faithless. Valen knew the story. It was one of his mother's favorites. Curlis denied the faith, and was cursed to live forever until the departed consented to allow him entry to the beyond. It was said he still wandered the land, seeking his faith but never finding it.
"You have made your fate, faithless one," intoned the puppeteer, bobbing the collection of wooden heads that represented the departed. "We do not judge you. You judge yourself. Find your faith and we will welcome you."
Valen, momentarily distracted by the puppeteer's skill and the craftsmanship evident in his dolls, forced himself to turn back to the crowd.
"Look," he told himself. "Concentrate. He's here. He has to be."
His survey stopped when a face in the audience caught his attention. A man in his 30s with lean, strong features and a sad gaze. A familiar gaze.
"Erlin." Valen stared in astonishment. "He came back here? Is he mad?"
Erlin seemed completely rapt by the puppet show, his sad gaze utterly absorbed. Valen puzzled over what to do.
Speak to him? Ignore him? Kill him?
Dark thoughts flickered through his head, driven by panic. "I helped him and the girl. If they catch him..." It was the image of the girl's face and the feel of her scarf around his neck that forced sanity back into his thoughts. "Walk away," he decided. "Safer if you never saw him."
Erlin looked up then, his eyes meeting Valen's, widening into alarmed recognition.
He glanced once back at the puppet show, his expression an unreadable confusion of emotion, then turned and disappeared into the crowd. Valen was seized by a compulsion to follow him, find out if Sella was well. But as he started forward, a shout erupted behind him, followed by the sound of clashing blades. It was 50 yards away, near the gallows. A crowd was knotted around the scene of the disturbance, and he had to force his way through, drawing grunts of pain and insults, as his desperation made him less than gentle.
"What was he doing?" someone in the crowd was saying. "Trying to get through the cordon," another voice said. "Honest thing. Not what you expect from a brother. Think they'll hang him too?"
Finally, he was through the throng and drew up short at the scene before him. There were 5 of them, soldiers of the 27th Cavalry, judging by the black tail feathers in their tunics that gave them their informal name, the Black Hawks. Reputedly a favorite with the king because of their service during the Wars of Unification, the Black Hawks were often given the honor of policing public events or ceremonials. One of them, the largest, had Norta by the throat, a beefy arm wrapped around his neck as two of his comrades attempted to restrain him. A fourth man stood back a little, his sword raised, poised for a strike.
"Hold the bastard still, faith's sake!" he shouted.
They all bore bruises or cuts, showing Norta had not been easily captured. A fifth man was kneeling nearby, clutching at a bloody wound on his arm, his face grey with pain and tense with fury.
"Kill the fucker!"
he snarled.
"He's bloody crippled me!"
Seeing the man with the sword draw back his arm further, Valin acted without thought. His one remaining throwing knife left his hand before he knew he had drawn it. It was the finest throw he had ever managed, the blade catching the swordsman just below the wrist. The sword dropped to the ground instantly, its owner gaping in shock at the shiny piece of metal impaling his limb. Valin was already moving, his sword hissing from the scabbard on his back. As Valin charged, one of the men holding Norta's arm released him, scrabbling at his belt for his own sword. Norta saw the opportunity, and brought his elbow round to smash into the soldier's face, making him stagger into Valin's flying kick. The soldier stumbled a few more paces, blood streaming thickly from his nose and mouth, before collapsing heavily to the earth. Norta snatched a throwing knife from his belt and stabbed backwards, sinking the blade deep into the thigh of the man choking his neck, forcing him to release his hold. Valin moved in and dropped him with a blow to the temple from his sword hilt. The remaining Black Hawk had released his hold on Norta and was backing away, sword drawn and trembling point flicking between them.
"You're," he stammered, "you're breaking the king's peace. You're under—"
Norta moved with blinding speed, ducking under the sword and smashing his fist into the man's face. Two more punches, and he was down.
"Hawks?"
Norta spat on the unconscious soldier. "More like sheep." He turned to Valin, a hysterical desperation shining in his eyes.
"Thank you, brother. Come."
He turned away wildly. "We have to rescue my fa—" Valin's blow took him under the ear, a technique they had learned after much painful tutelage under Master Intris. It rendered the victim unconscious, but without lasting damage. Valin knelt next to his friend, checking the pulse on his neck.
"I'm sorry, brother," he whispered before sheathing his sword and gathering him up, hoisting his inert form over his shoulder with difficulty.
Valin was bigger than Norta, but still his brother's weight was a substantial burden as he moved towards the cordon of stunned spectators. Not one of them said a word as he gestured for them to make way.
"Hold there!"
a shouted command breaking the silence like glass, the crowd's shock giving way to sudden babble of incomprehension and amazement.
"Beat five Blackhawks, just the two of them. Never seen the like. It's treason to strike a soldier. King's edict said so. Hold!"
The voice again cutting through the noise. Looking round, Valin saw a mounted figure kicking his horse forward through the crush, occasionally laying about himself with a riding crop to speed progress.
"Make way!" he commanded. "King's business, make way!"
Emerging from the throng, he drew his mount up, and Valin saw him clearly. A tall man on a black warhorse, a thoroughbred of Renfalin stock. He wore a ceremonial uniform with a black feather in his tunic, and the short-plumed helmet of an officer on his head. Beneath the visor, the rider's lean, clean-shaven face was hard with fury. The single four-pointed star on his breastplate depicted his rank, Lord Marshal of the Realm Guard. Behind the mounted man, a troop of Black Hawks on foot emerged and fanned out, swords drawn, pushing the crowd back with the aid of a few kicks and punches. Some of them tended to their fallen comrades, casting vengeful glances at Valin as they did so. The man with Valin's knife through his wrist was weeping openly in pain. Seeing no avenue of escape, Valin gently laid Norta on the earth and stepped away, careful to keep himself between his friend and the man on the horse.
"What is this?" the marshal demanded.
"I answer to the order," Valin replied.
"You'll answer to me, order whelp, or I'll string you from the nearest tree by your guts."
Valin resisted the impulse to draw his sword as some of the Black Hawks moved closer. He knew he couldn't fight them all, not without killing a few, which was unlikely to help Norta.
"Might I know your name, my lord?" he inquired.
desperately playing for time and hoping his voice didn't tremble. "I'll know your name first, whelp."
"Valin Alsorna, brother of the Sixth Order, awaiting confirmation." The name ran through the crowd like a wave.
"Sorna, Battle Lord's boy. Should have known, spit an image."
The rider's eyes narrowed at the name, but his furious expression remained firmly in place. "Lakaril Alhestian," he said, "Lord Marshal of the 27th Regiment of Horse and Sword of the Realm." He nudged his mount closer, peering down at Norta's inert form.
"And him?"
"Brother Norta," Valin said.
"I'm told he tried to rescue the traitor. Why would a brother of the Order do such a thing, I wonder?"
"He knows," Valin realized. "He knows who Norta is."
"I couldn't say, Lord Marshal," he replied. "I saw my brother about to be murdered and prevented it."
"Murdered my arse," one of the Blackhawks spat, face flushed with anger. "He was resisting lawful arrest."
"He's of the Order," Valin spoke to Alhestian. "Like me. We answered to the Order. If you believe we have transgressed, you must take the matter to our aspect."
"All are subject to King's law, boy," Alhestian replied evenly. "Brothers, soldiers, and battle lords."
He stared hard into Valin's eyes.
"And you and your brother will answer to it."
He motioned his men forward.
"Keep your hands clear of your weapons, boy, or you'll be answering to the departed."
Valin reached back to grasp his sword hilt as the Blackhawks advanced. Perhaps if he wounded a few, he could create enough confusion to escape into the crowd with Norta. There could be no return to the Order after this. No welcome for those that fought the Realm Guard.
"Life as an outlaw," Valin pondered. "Can't be that bad."
"Easy now, lad,"
one of the Blackhawks warned, a veteran sergeant with a weather-beaten face. He advanced slowly, his sword held low, a dagger in his left hand. Seeing the way his feet moved and the easy balance of his stance, Valin judged him to be the most dangerous of his opponents.
"Leave the sword where it is," the sergeant continued. "No need for any more blood here. You let us take you in, and it'll all get sorted out, nice and civilized."
Seeing the wary fury of the faces of the other Blackhawks, Valin judged that the treatment he and Norta would receive would be anything but civilized.
"I've no wish to spill any blood," he told the sergeant, drawing his sword. "But I will if you make me."
"The hour drags ever onward, sergeant,"
Alhestian drawled, leaning forward in his saddle.
"End this." "Well, here's a pretty picture,"
a voice boomed from the crowd, the throng parting amidst shouts of protest as three figures forced their way through. Valin felt a tug at his heart. It was Barkus, flanked by Canis and Dentos. Barkus was smiling at the Hawks, a picture of affability. By contrast, Canis and Dentos stared at them with the flat, concentrated aggression they had learned through years of hard training. They all had their swords drawn.
"A pretty picture indeed,"
Barkus went on, as the three of them fell in beside Valin.
"A brace of hawks all lined up for plucking." "Get out of here, boy,"
Alhestian spat at Barkus.
"This is not your concern."
"Heard the commotion,"
Barkus told Valin, ignoring Alhestian. He glanced back at Norta's inert form.
"Snuck out, did he?"
"Yes. They're going to execute his father."
"We heard," Canis said.
"Bad business.
They say he was a good man.
Still, the king is just and must have his reasons."
"Tell that to Norta," Dentos said.
"Poor bastard.
Did they do that to him?"
"No," Valin said. "Couldn't think of another way to stop him."
"Master Solis is going to beat us for a week," Dentos grumbled.
They fell silent, watching the Blackhawks who stared back, faces full of malevolent anger, but making no move to advance.
"They're afraid," Canis observed.
"They should be," Barkus said.
Valin risked a glance at Alhestian, clearly not a man used to being balked. The marshal was visibly shaking with fury.
"You!"
He stabbed a finger at one of the cavalrymen.
"Find Captain Hintel. Tell him to bring his company."
"A whole company?"
Barkus sounded cheerful at the prospect.
"You do us much honour, my lord."
A few people in the crowd laughed, making Alhestian's rage even more palpable.
"You'll all be flayed for this!" he shouted, his voice nearly a scream. "Don't imagine the king will grant you an easy death!"
"Speaking for my father again, Lord Marshal."
A tall, red-haired young man had emerged from the mass of onlookers. His clothes were modest, but finely made, and there was something strange about the way the crowd parted before him. Each citizen's eyes averted, heads bowed, a few even dropping to one knee. Valen was shocked when he turned back and found Canis and the Hawks all doing the same.
"Kneel, brothers," Canis hissed. "Honor the prince."
"Prince?" Looking at the tall man again, Valen recalled a serious youth he had seen at the king's palace so many years before. Prince Malcius had grown almost as tall and broad as his father. Valen looked for soldiers of the royal guard, but saw no one accompanying the prince. "A prince who walks alone amongst his people," he thought, puzzled.
"Valen,"
Canis whispered insistently. As he made to kneel, the prince waved his hand.
"No need, brother. Please, rise, all of you."
He smiled at the kneeling multitude.
"The ground is muddy.
Now then, my lord," he turned to Alhestian, "what manner of disturbance is this?"
"A traitorous outrage, Highness,"
Alhestian said forcefully, rising from a bow, his left knee caked in mud.
"These boys attacked my men in an effort to rescue the prisoner."
"You bloody liar,"
Barkus exploded.
"We came to help our brothers when they'd been attacked."
He fell silent as the prince held up his hand. Malcius paused and surveyed the scene, taking in the wounded Blackhawks and Norta's unconscious form.
"You, brother," he said to Valen, "are you a traitor as the Lord Marshal claims?"
Valen noted his eyes barely left Norta.
"I'm no traitor, Highness,"
Valen replied, trying to keep any trace of fear or anger from his voice. "Neither are my brothers. They are here only in my defense. If an answer must be given for what has happened here, then it is mine alone to make."
"And your fallen brother?"
Prince Malcius moved closer, staring down at Norta with an odd intensity.
"Should he make an answer too?"
"His actions were driven by grief," Valen faltered.
"He will answer to our aspect."
"Is he badly hurt?"
"A blow to the head, Highness. He should wake in an hour or so."
The prince continued to stare down at Norta for a moment longer, before turning away, saying softly,
"When he wakes, tell him I grieve too."
He moved away and addressed Alhestian.
"This is a very serious business, Lord Marshal. Very serious."
"Indeed, Highness."
"So serious that full resolution will take so much time as to delay the execution. Something I should hate to explain to the king, unless you wish to do so."
Alhestian's eyes briefly met the prince's, the light of mutual enmity shining clearly.
"I should hate to intrude on the king's time needlessly," he grated through clenched teeth.
"I am grateful for your consideration," Prince Malcius turned to the Hawks.
"Take these wounded men to the royal pavilion. They will have the care of the king's physician. Lord Marshal, I hear there are some riotous drunkards near the west gate in need of your attentions. Do not let me detain you further."
Alhestian bowed and remounted, guiding his horse past Valen and the others, with the promise of retribution writ large in his face.
"Out of the way!"
he shouted, his riding crop lashing the crowd as he forced his way through.
"Take your brother back to the Order," Prince Malcius told Valen. "Make sure you tell your aspect what occurred here, lest he hear it from other lips first."
"We will, Highness,"
Valen assured him, bowing as low as he could. 100 yards away, a steady, monotonous drumbeat was sounding, the crowd falling silent as the beat increased in volume. Valen could see a row of spear points rising above the throng, moving in time with the drum, drawing ever closer to the dark silhouette of the gallows.
"Take him away," the prince commanded. "Senseless or not, he should not be here."
It was as they made their way through the silent crowd, Valen and Canis carrying Nortar, Dentos and Barkus forcing a passage, that the drumbeat stopped. There was a silence so thick, Valen could feel the anticipation like a weight pressing him into the earth. There was a distant chatter, then an eruption of cheering, thousands of fists raised in the air in triumph, manic joy on every face. Canis surveyed the celebrating crowd with naked disgust. Valen couldn't hear the word he mouthed,
but the shape of his lips carried the meaning clearly enough.
Scum.
Norto disappeared into the care of the masters as soon as they were within the walls of the order house. It was obvious from the guarded looks of the other boys, and the glares of the masters, that word of their adventure had sped ahead of their return.
"We'll see to him,"
Master Chekrin said, relieving them of Norto's burden, lifting him easily in his muscle-thick arms.
"You'll not get to your room.
Do not come out until ordered. Do not talk to anyone until ordered." To ensure the instruction was followed, Master Howlin accompanied them to the North Tower. The burnt man's usual passion for song evidently quelled by the circumstances. When the door slammed behind them, Valen was sure the master was waiting outside.
"Are we prisoners now?"
he wondered. In the room they set aside their gear and waited.
"Did you get my boots?" Valen asked Canis.
"I didn't get the chance, sorry." Valen shrugged. The silence stretched.
"Marcus nearly shagged the tart behind the ale tent,"
Dentos blurted.
He always found silence particularly oppressive. "Right saucy binch he was, too. Tits like melons. Right, brother?"
Barker stared balefully at his brother from across the room.
"Shut up," he said flatly.
More silence.
"You know they'll give you your coins if you get caught,"
Valen said to Barker. Occasionally girls from Varenshold and surrounding villages turned up at the gate with swollen bellies or squalling infants in tow. The guilty brother would be forced into a hasty joining ceremony, conducted by the aspect, and given his coins plus an extra 2, one for the girl and one for the child. Oddly, a few boys actually seemed happy to be leaving under such circumstances, although others would protest their innocence. But a truth test by the Second Order would soon prove the matter one way or the other.
"I didn't bloody do anything," Barker sputtered.
"You had your tongue down her throat," Dentos laughed.
"I'd had a few ales. Besides, it was Canis getting all the attention."
Valen turned to Canis, seeing a slow flush creeping up his friend's cheeks.
"Really?"
"Not half. All over him they were. Ooh, isn't he pretty?"
Valen suppressed a laugh as Canis began to blush furiously. "I'm sure he resisted manfully."
"I don't know," Dentos mused.
"A few more minutes, I reckon we'd have had a whole troop of pretty bastards at the gates in 9 months' time. Lucky some drunk came in and started shouting about a fight between the Hawks and the Order."
Mention of the fight brought the silence again. It was Barkers who finally said it.
"You don't think they'll kill him, do you?"
The room was growing dark before the door opened, and Master Solis strode in, a mountainous anger dominating his expression.
"Sauna," he grated. "Come with me. The rest of you, get a meal from the kitchens, then go to bed."
The urge to ask about Norta was overwhelming, but Solis's thunderous visage was enough to keep them silent. Valen followed him down the stairs and across the courtyard to the west wall, all the time watching for any sign of his cane. He expected to be led to the Aspect's chambers, but instead they made their way to the infirmary, finding Master Henthal tending Norta. He was laid in bed, his face slack, half-lidded eyes unfocused and dimmed. Valen knew the look. Sometimes boys with grievous injuries had need of strong medicine, which took the pain away, but left them out of touch with the world.
"Red flower and shade bloom,"
Master Henthal explained, as Valen and Solis entered.
"He was raving when he came round. Gave the aspect a nasty whack before we got him under control."
Valen moved to the bed, heart heavy with the sight of his brother.
He looked so weak.
"Will he be all right, Master?"
he asked.
"Seen it before, raving and thrashing about. Usually happens to men who've seen a battle too many. He'll sleep soon. When he wakes, he'll be shaky, but himself again."
Valen turned to Solis. "Has the aspect made his judgment, Master?" Solis glanced at Master Henthal, who nodded and left the room.
"Judgment is not warranted," Solis replied.
"We wounded the king's soldiers."
"Yes. If you had been more attentive to my teaching, you might have killed them.
The Lord Marshal
does not command here.
Norta disobeyed instruction, for which punishment should be levied. However, the aspect feels punishment has been levied already.
As for you, your disobedience was in defense of your brother.
Judgment is not required. Master Solis moved to the far side of the bed and placed a hand against Norto's brow. This fever should fade when the red flower wears off. He'll feel it, though. Feel the pain like a knife, sticking in his guts, twisting. Pain like that can either make a boy into a man or a monster. It is my opinion that the Order has seen enough of monsters. Valen understood it then, Solis's anger. It's not us, he realized. It's what the king did to Norta's father. What that did to Norta. We're his swords. He beats us into shape. The king has spoiled one of his blades. My brothers and I will guide him, Valen said. His pain will be ours. We will help him bear it.
See that you do.
Solis looked up, his gaze more intense than usual.
When a brother goes to the bad, there is but one way of dealing with him, and brother should not kill brother.
Norta came round in the morning, his groan waking Valen, who had stayed beside him through the night.
What?
Norta gazed around with bleary eyes.
What's this?
Seeing Valen, he fell silent, the light of memory returning to his eyes as his hand went to the lump on the back of his head.
You hit me, he said.
Valen watched the dreadful knowledge flood back, draining Norta's face of color and making him slump under the weight of his sorrow.
I'm sorry, Norta, Valen said.
It was all he could think to say.
Why did you stop me? Norta whispered through tears.
They would have killed you.
Then they would have done me a service.
Don't talk like that. I doubt your father's soul would have dwelt happily in the beyond, knowing that you had followed him there so soon. Norta wept silently for a while, and Valen watched him, 100 empty condolences dying on his lips.
I don't have the words, he realized.
There are no words for this.
Did you see it?
Norta asked finally.
Did he suffer?
Valen thought of the clatter of the trap and the exultation of the crowd, a fearful knowledge to take into the beyond that so many rejoiced at your death.
It was quick. They said he stole from the king. My father would never do that. He cherished the king and served him well.
Valen seized on the only comfort he could offer. Prince Malsius said to tell you that he grieves also.
Malsius? He was there?
He helped us, made the hawks let us go.
I thought that he recognized you.
Norta's expression softened a little, becoming distant. When I was a boy, we would ride together. Malsius was my father's student and often came to our home. My father taught many boys of the noble houses. His wisdom in statecraft and diplomacy was famed. Norta fumbled for the cloth on the table nearby and wiped the tears from his face.
What is the Aspect's judgment?
He feels you have been punished enough.
Then I'm not even granted the mercy of release from this place.
We were both sent here at the behest of our fathers. I have respected my father's wishes by staying here, although I do not know why he gave me to the Order.
Your father also would have had good reason for sending you here.
It was his wish in life. It will remain his wish now he is with the departed.
Perhaps you should respect it.
So I should languish here, while my father's lands are forfeit and my family left destitute? Will your family be any less destitute with you at their side? Do you have riches that will help them? Think what kind of life you would have outside the Order. You'll be the son of a traitor, marked by the king's soldiers for vengeance. Your family will have burdens enough without you at their side. The Order is no longer your prison. It's your protection. Norta sank back into the bed, staring at the ceiling in mixed exhaustion and grief.
Please, brother, I must be alone for a time.
Valen rose and went to the door. Remember, you're not alone in